Hi, my name is Rick Stack, and I will be your narrator throughout this program. I had the privilege of being a friend and student of the late author Jane Roberts, who published over 10 volumes of Seth material between the years 1963 and 1984. In 1963, Jane Roberts and her husband Robert Butts began experimenting with the Ouija board as part of an experiment for a book Jane was working on extrasensory perception. During her experiments, a personality began to communicate with Jane and Rob through the Ouija board, and eventually, with Jane's permission, began to speak through Jane while she was in a trance state. This phenomena is currently being called trance channeling. The entity that spoke through Jane Roberts called himself Seth, and stated that he was a non-physical teacher who had lived many lives in physical reality. To date, the Seth books have sold over 3 million copies, and have been translated into 11 languages. If by any chance you are listening to this tape but have not already read a Seth book, allow me to recommend the books entitled Seth Speaks and The Nature of Personal Reality, both by Jane Roberts. The Seth audio collection consists of selections of Seth sessions, primarily taped by myself, while attending Jane Roberts' classes in Elmira, New York, between 1972 and 1979. The classes were held in Jane's living room, which was generally filled with students who were seated on the sofa and chairs or sprawled out on the floor. Jane Roberts would conduct the class and at various points would go into trance to allow Seth to come through. The transition from Jane to Seth was very smooth and quick. When Seth was about to come through, he would simply take off Jane's glasses and begin to speak. In this manner, Jane would go in and out of trance many times throughout the evening. As you listen to these sessions, you may notice that Seth refers to Jane Roberts and her husband, Rob Butts, by the names Rupert and Joseph. These names, according to Seth, are Jane and Rob's entity names, representative of their whole selves. Please note that these tapes were recorded under quite informal conditions, and therefore are not as perfect as they would be had they been recorded in a studio. For example, Seth's voice will sometimes sound different from selection to selection. Occasionally, you will hear sounds of traffic which came from outside Jane's window. In a few spots, some material was lost due to tape changes, or the laughter of the class drowning out Seth's voice. Wherever possible, I have inserted such lost material for the sake of continuity. In addition, transcripts of these sessions have been provided to help you follow along with Seth's voice. In order to receive the full impact of listening to Seth, it is recommended that you do not read ahead in the transcripts, but simply use them to read along as Seth is speaking. In the true spirit of the Seth material, these tapes were recorded spontaneously. And now I offer them to you to help you discover the full potentials of your spontaneous being. On this tape, you will hear selections of Seth speaking about one of the fundamental concepts contained in the thousands of pages of Seth material dictated through Jane Roberts. The concept is that we all create our own reality according to our thoughts, emotions, and beliefs. According to Seth, the physical world with which we are so familiar can be thought of as a training system of sorts. In this reality, we are being trained to become responsible co-creators with all that is. We are learning that the thoughts and emotions that we focus on in our minds will be materialized in actuality. An important step in this training is the full realization that every aspect of your life, every event that seems to happen to you is instead caused by you, in accordance with your beliefs about yourself and your universe. If you want to change your reality, you must first change your thoughts, emotions, and beliefs. Let's listen to Seth now as he speaks about the concept that we create our own reality.
Your beliefs form reality. Your individual beliefs and your joint beliefs. Now the intensity of a belief is extremely important. And there are some group assumptions that you share. And it is more difficult for you to go counter to those assumptions. But you can go counter to those assumptions as this class goes counter to those assumptions. And if you believe, in very simple terms, that people mean you well and will treat you kindly, they will. And if you believe that the world is against you, then so it will be in your experience. And if you believe that you will begin to deteriorate at 22, then so you shall. And if you believe that you are poor and always will be, then so your experience will so prove to you. Your beliefs meet you in the face when you look in the mirror. They form your image. You cannot escape your beliefs. They are, however, the method by which you create your experience. When I speak to you about beliefs, you think of negative beliefs. You see? But you are all sitting here, quite physical, in front of me. Your eyes all move. Your heads nod. Your blood thunders through your veins. You quite obviously, all of you, believe that you are alive. And the belief serves you very well. You believe that it is autumn, and that so it is. So do not necessarily think in terms of negative beliefs. He believes, he laughs, and he does, and we laugh with him. You do not simply carry within you negative beliefs. The very joy of your being speaks of your positive beliefs. So I did not mean you to concentrate upon the negative beliefs that you have with that in mind. I want you to see where your beliefs conflict with each other. I want you to examine for the first time in this life your conscious mind and its content. Now we have heard much talk here of the dark depths of the unconscious and the deep powers that reside within us. And a little about the miracle of our conscious mind and what might be there. It would almost seem that you are all very anxious to think that all the answers were beneath consciousness, where it was difficult for you to find them. So we are changing the game a bit. You all pride yourselves on being conscious creatures. Then I am telling you to be aware of the contents of your conscious mind. A simple enough request. You are only now beginning to know how loaded it is. It is all available. The beliefs are not buried unless you believe that they are. The thoughts and the feelings and emotions that guide you are not lost in the dark closet of your mind, but quite there if you are willing simply to look. It is all available. And in its own way, it is all creative, and it is all constructive, and it is all there for you to see and use and recognize. Now, I have said this in my book, but I have only begun to say it. The hobgoblins are not down deep in the unconscious. You do not have to play hide and seek with psychologists to find them. They are not buried in your past, in this life or in any other life. You are not bound by promises given. You are not bound by false beliefs. You are a free conscious being. And so hopefully you will learn how to be joyful, conscious being. And when you are, then you will not be afraid of the inner self. And you will freely let in data from the outside world and the inside world. Being quite secure in your position. When you go to bed at night, listen to your thoughts. They are conscious. You can become aware of what you are thinking. Many of the answers are therefore in your conscious mind. You have simply become used to accepting one thin line of conscious thought and ignoring all the other, or assigning the other to other causes. The goodies are there and they are yours. It is important that you hear, realize that you are not at the mercy of the unexplainable, that you are not at the mercy of events over which you have no control, whether those events are psychological events or physical ones in your turn. As I have told you, there is little difference if you believe that your present life is caused by incidents in your early infancy, or caused by past lives over which equally you feel you have no control. Your events, your lives, your experiences are caused by your present beliefs. Change the beliefs and your life changes.
Throughout the years that I listened to Seth speak in Jane Roberts' living room, he continually reminded us how important it was to understand that we create our own reality. He said that this was one of the most important things that we had set out to learn. He said that this principle applied in every dimension of experience, both physical and non-physical. Jane Roberts and her husband Rob Butts used to keep a Seth quote pasted up on their wall. It read, "You get what you concentrate upon. There is no other main rule." The concept that you form your experience according to your beliefs applies in every area of your life. There are no accidents. Every aspect of your life, every joy or sorrow, every success or seeming failure, is a reflection of the beliefs, thoughts, and emotions that you have been concentrating upon in your mind. At this point, many people do not as yet understand this fundamental principle, and so believe that they are at the mercy of circumstance. This is particularly unfortunate in the area of illness, when many believe that disease is simply bad luck, something that strikes you out of the blue, so to speak. According to Seth, if you are ill, there is a reason for it. The illness indicates that you are making mental errors of some sort, that you are misdirecting creative energy. The illness is a result of your beliefs. Understanding this, you can then proceed to examine your conscious mind, discover the reasons for the illness, and then make the necessary changes in mental attitude. Now, many people in this culture, of course, rely on the medical profession in times of illness. Lately, there is a growing interest in the effect of the mind on health and disease. But for the most part, illness is still treated in a separate context, and drugs are often prescribed to alleviate specific symptoms. Let's listen to Seth now as he speaks about the use of drugs to treat physical illness.
The thing tries to solve a particular problem. In so doing, it may end up with a physical difficulty. The physical difficulty is meant to remind the personality of the inner problem behind it. The difficulty will be cleared up when the inner problem is. Now, if instead a drug is used to camouflage the ailment, or in your terms, to heal it, to cure it, to get rid of it, the inner self is in a quandary. For it knows the problem has not been solved, though the symptom has disappeared. The drug used to cure the body may, in many instances, obscure the problem and confuse both the body and the mind. Another ailment must be taken, therefore, that will symbolically and quite practically materialize the problem in your reality. So the patient will get another ailment. If this ailment is also obscured or cured through the drug, whatever it may be, then the inner self is in a further quandary, and it will continue to try to materialize the problem so that it can be solved. The communication between the mental, psychic, and the physical portions of the being can, in such instances, become obscured. Now, that does not always apply. For someone with a severe difficulty, believing in the effectiveness of your doctor, may be given a wonder drug and a believe in it so that when the symptoms are completely annihilated, he is convinced of the fact of his inner health and therefore feels secure enough to solve his inner problem. In such a case, however, he has effectively used the drug to heal his mind and his body. The drug has not done it. This does not mean that you cannot take advantage of such drugs. It does mean that when you do, you are operating within a framework of reality that still, to some extent, divides you from the reality of your own being.
In Seth's book, The Nature of Personal Reality, he delves further into some of the issues revolving around current medical practices. He does not, however, suggest giving up doctors or modern medicines. Instead, he suggests that since many of us have accepted the belief framework of the current medical profession, we should use it, but begin to understand and utilize our natural power to heal ourselves and create health. Now, you create your reality according to your beliefs. But what exactly is a belief? A belief is simply a strong idea that you hold in your mind. And according to Seth, each belief has an electromagnetic reality. Just as light and sound and physical objects can all be thought of as different forms of energy, beliefs also are a form of energy. You might think of a belief as a pattern of energy, with each individual pattern attracting certain kinds of events. Each individual on this planet has access to incredible power, the power to shape their experience by consciously focusing on thoughts and emotions that will produce fulfilling, life-giving realities. In order to use your power effectively, however, you must be willing to change your beliefs in spite of the physical circumstances that are your current experience. When you change your mental landscape, the outer landscape of your life will soon reflect your new belief systems. To many people interested in these endeavors, the altering of what may seem to be old, deeply entrenched belief systems sounds at first like a Herculean task. In the upcoming tape, however, Seth addresses this attitude and offers an alternate way of viewing this work. The class begins with Seth commenting on his book, The Nature of Personal Reality. This is his classic work on beliefs and the art of consciously creating your reality. He also uses the term Sumari at the beginning of class, which is his word for a certain family of consciousness. Seth has described several such families, each with large memberships, both physical and non-physical, and each family consisting of beings that have similar characteristics and interests. Seth is a Sumari, and so are many of the people in the class. Let's listen to Seth now as he proposes a playful approach to working with your beliefs.
All you good Sumeri who are getting Sumeria, Rupert is going to read at you part of my book, and I warned you to take it to heart, for you are the first to hear it, and hopefully you are the first to use it. You are not just to listen to it, therefore. You are to make it your own through examining your own beliefs and your own conscious mind. Now the Sumeri like to play. So they like to play with the contents of their minds. As this one over here does. So I want you to think of your ideas as children's blocks that you have in your mind. So that, as Rupert says, you can indeed mix and match them. And they are not heavy. Unless you believe that they are rightfully your playthings, and play with them. Do not sit solemnly before a belief and say, aha, this is my greater belief and it blocks my view. But as a child, kick it aside and make a new one. The ideas are your blocks. You can use them, therefore, playfully to build with. Or, if you will forgive me for using a pun, you can use them as objects that block your view.
This is the end of side one. Please fast forward the tape and continue on side two.
And the children deal quite joyfully with blocks. And if they erect structures that do not please them, then without an instant remorse, they knock them aside and make a new one. So if you have a pretty structure, save it. But if you have one that displeases you, then knock it aside The playground is yours. It is a war ground, if you make it into one. It is a playground of creativity and joy. If you realize that it is, there are some who peek in at your windows to see what you are up to with your blocks. There are some. Now you see what I have to put up with. With Rupert's new hairstyle. There are some who watch. But watching, those observers do not see a block and say, what a dirty old belief that is. Those watching do not feel that they must come in and kick aside your block for you. They only make sure that you have an infinite number of things to work with at your disposal. They only know that you form your own reality with the blocks that you have. And they do not judge. So that if such an observer peeks through the mortal window and sees a poor design, he does not say, what a faulty picture. He simply waits for you to kick the design apart and make a new one on your own. But the design, as it was a design and itself and a way of learning. Now there may be moments while you are juggling beliefs, when you realize that one structure does not satisfy you, and you have not as yet learned to construct a new one. And so you may go about your day in your own way thinking, oh, woe is me. Where can I look? These frightful beliefs imprison me and there is no way to go. But the new design with the new block are quite there and quite available. And if you were playful enough about it, you would be quite aware. And there is no need to wait for new beliefs. Unless you believe that you must wait for new beliefs. And there is no struggle. Unless you believe that you must struggle. And it is not hard. Unless you believe that it must be difficult. And the dream symbolism exists. Unless you believe it is so difficult to find that you cannot perceive it. And the answers are in your conscious mind. Unless you believe that they must be hidden. And so, if you play hide and seek in your playground, it is a great game. But you can stop playing hide and seek with yourselves whenever you choose. You may enjoy the game, but when you are finished with hide and seek, then you will find. And the finding is within yourself.
At this point, Seth withdrew, and Jane Roberts read portions of Seth's book, The Nature of Personal Reality, to the class. This book was not as yet published at the time, and Jane would read chapters of the book to us as she was working on it. As we discussed the selection that Jane had just read, one of the students, who happened to be a high school teacher, remarked that as he sat there in class, the work seemed quite clear, but that soon he would be back at home in his teaching reality, fighting the traffic lights and everything else that went along with his day-to-day existence. Seth returned, speaking to this student.
Play with the traffic lights. Play within the context of being a teacher. And you do that with your student. There is nothing that says that teaching must be a drag, unless you believe that it must. It can be a playful endeavor, and as you well know, when you are really teaching, it is a playful encounter.
With everyone? How about these few?
That can also be a playful encounter when you change your idea of their reality. They react not only to their own ideas of their reality, but to your ideas also.
What I believe
telepathically, in a feed-up, they pick up what you are feeding them. And if they believe they are troublesome, and you believe they are troublesome,
then
they will be indeed. But if you change your belief, already you cut the problem in half. Now, try it, and then tell me what you think.
You have a summary class.
You already have a summary class. You have only to understand that you do. They are rebels in their way. They do not want to do what they think they are supposed to do. Now you are a rebel in your own way. Identify with the rebel part of their nature and appeal to it. Give them things to do that they do not have to do. Challenge them. Let them think they can go further in their own way. Challenge their creativity. Appeal to their rebel nature, you old rebel.
As class discussion continued, one of the students said that she wondered how one actually went about changing beliefs. Seth then came through and said,
your thoughts have an electromagnetic reality. Now you must realize that this is true, or the rest of what I am saying will indeed sound like Pollyanna nonsense. When you think in terms, for example, of abundance and of plenty, then those thoughts draw to you abundance and a plenty as a magnet does. There will be a while you are changing your beliefs. For example, you will find yourself in a period where you feel quite self-deceptive and you are saying, I am surrounded by wealth and abundance, and you still look around you and you are poor, and you think, this is a lot of bull. But it took you some time to build up your beliefs to the point of your present experience. And so in your terms, there may be some lag before your new beliefs draw to you abundance. But your physical experience follows your thought, and you cannot change the experience without first changing your thought. Now, it does no good to believe two things at the same time. So what you do is this. You say, I will play around with this idea. I will admit that it might be possible that my own thoughts about money are causing my lack of it. And so for the hell of it, I will several times a day pretend that I am surrounded by abundance. And in my mind, I will imagine the things that I want. If it does not work, I have not lost a thing. But if it works, I have gained a lot. So you try it for several weeks. And each time that you do, the idea becomes a little bit more possible, a little bit more real. And in the meantime, these thoughts are changing the beliefs that you have had. They are at least balancing them. And they begin to draw to you abundance. There is no other way to change your physical reality but by changing your thoughts.
In the class discussion that followed, a student said that he felt that Seth's point that it had taken us some time to build up these beliefs, and that it would follow that it would possibly take some time to get them redirected, was a good one, and one that many failed to realize. Seth returned to comment.
I just said that to you so that you would realize you had nothing to lose, but you will instead gain. I just said that to give you a cushion, because you cannot start checking immediately. You cannot begin this and then start checking yourself and say, wait a minute, I've done this 5 minutes now, where is the money? But I also tell you that if you can change your belief in a split second with enough strength and intensity and reverse yourself in midair, so to speak, then the results could be instantaneous.
In this final segment of the class, Seth returns to comment after a student wondered aloud about changing beliefs concerning the acquisition of money.
For a moment, forget your question. You are a flower. A very lovely flower. The sun is bright and warm and glowing. and you are blooming because you are a flower. You exist in the natural world of abundance and glory, and the sun glows upon you and you open your petals. Now what would happen if in the middle of a bright Sunday afternoon a flower began to think and it said, what am I doing that the sun should shine down upon me? I am a poor, worthless little flower. The great world goes beyond me and I do nothing. Hardly anyone notices me. And I am very lonely. How is it that this great sun should shine down upon me? And so the flower, following its own thought, now begins to droop, and it wiggles its little stem over till it hangs its head beneath a giant oak tree where the sun cannot fall upon it in the shade. And they say a little flower begins to reason further, and it says, if the sun fell upon me, what would I have to do to deserve this great benediction? I must think of things to do to rationalize my existence. And as it thinks, it grows gloomier and darker and huddles up against the great tree so that the sun cannot reach. Now any flower has a better sense than that, and so should you. Abundance is all around you. It is the sun. It is the rain. Now you think of those things as natural and good. But wealth, in whatever terms you happen to translate it, is also a part of your natural world and a translation. And so for you to feel free to accept one portion of nature and not the other is not a good belief. You are. Your being is. You are a portion of all that is. Therefore you have a right to abundance as the flower has to the sun. In human terms, there are many kinds of abundance. And they are all yours. You must realize that you do not have to rationalize your existence. Because you are. You have a right to the abundance of nature in whatever way it is transformed or translated for you. And you have all to realize that your experience begins from within, and your joyful thoughts bring joy, and your abundant thoughts bring abundance, and the thoughts of limitation bring limitation. And when you are all laughing here and basking in your own being and glowing in your Samaritan sun, then you are enjoying abundance, your own abundance, your own sense of fun and creativity. So do not limit yourself. And realize that the energy that sweeps through this form is your own. A hint of the energy and the joy and abundance that belongs to you. So play with the blocks of your own beliefs. Enjoy your own being and spontaneity. And be in your being joyful.